is Joyce Community Church, where you can wake up to the love of God, grow in Christ, and step out in service. You are listening to our weekly sermon featuring Pastor John Kyler.
So are you persevering in gratitude? Yeah, maybe. No. I talked with a family member this week who is going through a difficult time. And she said to me, I don't think I can do this anymore. This is too much for me to bear. Why me? What did I do? And it's a question, or those are questions that we often ask as we find ourselves in the middle of temptations and trials. Last week, we looked at James and his encouragement to consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you meet trials of various kinds. And he defines that word trial to include both those things that come at us from the outside and those things that rise up from the inside, trials and temptations. The author in the letter of Hebrews is encouraging a church that's feeling the weight of persecution. They have in the past been faithful, and now as time goes on, the weight that they feel threatens to undo them, to cause them either to just kind of lose their focus and drift away, or to outright turn away from God, Christ whom they follow. By the end of the letter, chapter 12, the author writes, let us run with perseverance the race that has been marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. At the end of that chapter, he reminds them that since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, a reminder that there will come a day when everything is shaken and only that which is grounded and founded on Christ will stand firm. But we are inheritors of a kingdom that cannot be shaken, that we're not going to fall off, so to speak. Since we're receiving such a kingdom, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Perseverance and gratitude. Sometimes it's like, do we really have to? Can't we just be happy and get along and not have to persevere at all? I don't think any of us need a reminder that life is difficult. We just wish that it wasn't so difficult so often. But you know, we follow a crucified Messiah. It shouldn't surprise us that we will encounter various trials of many kinds as we live our life. I think the reality, though, is that life is hard for people who don't follow Christ. Is it not? Everybody, we live in this world weighed down by sin and brokenness and chaos and all of that affects everybody. It falls like rain on the good and the bad alike. Yet we're often surprised that hardship comes our way. There's a story in Matthew's gospel. It's really, I think, a very important for us as followers of Christ, because it shows Jesus in all of his humanity experiencing life as we experience it. And we see him come out of it with resolve and strength and success, if we are careful how we define that word success. But let me take you there, and it begins in Matthew 3. And Jesus goes up from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. And he comes to John, and John says, "You're coming to me to be baptized? I should be baptized by you." And Jesus said, "Let it be so. This is necessary in order for us to fulfill all righteousness." And then Jesus is baptized by John, and as he comes up out of the water, the sky opens up and a dove descends, and the voice of God speaks, and he says, "This is my son, whom I love, and with whom I am well pleased, in whom I delight." And then the next thing you get in chapter 4 is then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry, which seems like an unnecessary statement, but he was hungry. It's an important statement because it grounds it in the reality of his humanity, that Jesus fasted 40 nights and 40 days and he was hungry. When the slanderer came to him and he said, "If you are the Son of God, turn these stones into bread." And Jesus said, "It's written, man, not any man, shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." And then the devil takes Jesus, presumably in some kind of vision or actually in some kind of transport of some way, and he sets him at the highest point of the temple. And he says, "If you are the Son of God, jump. And God will send his angels. He will command them to shore you up, lest you strike your foot on a stone." And Jesus said, "It's written that you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." And then the devil took him to another high place, a mountain, and he showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all of their sparkle and glory and splendor. And he said, "You can have all this if you will just bow down and worship me." And Jesus says, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written that you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." And then the devil left him, and the angels came and attended to him. This is a rich story that is packed with theology, and I won't try to unpack all of it, just a little bit of it for us. First, Jesus comes to John to be baptized by him in the Jordan River. John tries to dissuade him. Jesus says, no, do this now so that all righteousness might be fulfilled. Jesus, in his baptism, is taking on or identifying with us that at some point we will identify with him. He is entering into this ritual of cleansing from sin, even though he had no experience of sin, so that we might enter into an experience of righteousness, even though we don't have any. And did you catch that part where Jesus comes out of the water and God says, this is my beloved Son in whom I delight? And that the temptations of the devil are all about proving that you really are the Son of God? The temptation of Jesus is primarily a temptation, well, it's a temptation of a couple of things, but one is about his identity. Is he really the Son of God? Does God really love him and care for him? It's a question that we are all faced in the middle of our temptations. Note, too, that Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. That the wilderness, that place of loneliness, that place of desolation, that place that's uninhabitable for a very long time, it's a place where the resources for life are consumed up faster than they're gathered. It's where the water comes down and evaporates before you have any possibility of getting what you need. There is I think it's Arizona, some of you have been there probably, Lake Powell. It's a man-made lake in the middle of the desert. And once we were on vacation, we weren't planning to go there, but we saw it on the map. It was the middle of July, and we're in the desert. It's like, oh, there's this lake. Let's go stop there and go swimming. And so we pull up to the parking lot, and we have about maybe 100 and 150 yards to walk to the lake where we're going to go swimming. And we were totally unprepared, so we're just going to go swimming in the clothes that we're wearing. So we get out, we walk in, we go play around in a lake for a little bit, and we have a great time. It's a beautiful kind of experience on this hot, hot day in this refreshing cold water. And we get out, and now we're dripping wet. So now what are we going to do? But we say, well, okay, we'll just hang out till we dry off. But as we turn around and we head back to the car, it's so hot and so dry that by the time we walk back to the car, we're dry enough to sit down on the seats without getting anything wet. It just sucked the moisture. The air just sucked the moisture right out of us. That's life in the wilderness. Jesus is led by the Spirit into the wilderness, that place where the resources of life get sucked out of you faster than you can imagine. And we have all been there, have we not? Some of us are there even this morning. What we get as we follow Christ and the presence of the Spirit in our life is not an escaping from the wilderness. The Spirit isn't given to us so that we can avoid the wilderness, but rather so that we can walk through the wilderness with God along our side. Some of you are very familiar with Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. And yay, I don't know why he says yay. Yay, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He's not happy about it, really. But even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. One thing we get here is Jesus, who is led to the wilderness by the Spirit to be tempted by the devil, And we need to pause and remember that the Spirit is with us, not to take us around, but take us through to the other side. The devil said, if you're the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. The devil said, if you're the Son of God, jump off and prove it, and God will give his angels command concerning you. If you bow down and worship me, I'll give you everything you want. Is not this the temptation for all of us? The temptation to be ruled by our hungers and our appetites? We often think of Christianity as a struggle against keeping our appetites and our desires in order, and it is some of that, but the temptations are much bigger than that. As we look at Jesus, there's a temptation to be spectacular, to be liked, to be noticed, to be praised. Throw yourself off the temple, and all the people down there below, they'll see the angels come and swoop you up, and that's like, then you could say like, ta-da, here I am. You could be like cool, and you'll go viral and all of that stuff. Or you can have everything you want if you just, and you don't have to go the route of obedience. You can just go the route of worshiping me. You can avoid all that cross stuff. You can sidestep it all. And every time Jesus says, well, it's written here that you shall love the Lord your God. You shall worship him only. It is written that you don't eat by bread alone. It is written not to test the Lord your God. There's an important lesson for us there, obviously, that the scriptures reveal what God's resources for us in moments of trial and temptation. But it's also about identity. When our appetites start managing us, it's about our identity. When our pursuit of fame and recognition gets the best of us, it's about our identity. When our ambition is out of control and calls us to shortcut the road there by competing and denigrating others, it's about our identity. The way through the wilderness is the way that Jesus leads us. And if we're going to follow Jesus, we'll go where he has already gone. See, in the wilderness, there's a gift that is given to us. It's the gift of seeing what's really in our hearts. And then knowing that God still cares, loves, and calls us his beloved. A couple of things about the wilderness. I could go on and on, and maybe I'll return to these again at another time. There's this piece about Jesus' humanity, knowing that Jesus has experienced everything that you have experienced in terms of the challenges of hunger, need for approval and ambition, all good and appropriate things. And Jesus will go on to show us that the things that we're always tempted with are the things that we already have because we're already children of God. That we can therefore be faithful in the moment. I guess we're moving pushing the edge of time here. I'll have to come back to this a little bit later in the series. We are a people who profess that Jesus is both God and man, right? The challenge is how does that all that work out, right? So we know that Jesus is fully God and he's fully man, but what does that mean? And sometimes I think we fall into the trap of thinking that it's like a light switch, that, you know, when Jesus is doing miracles and challenging the devil, the switch is flipped up. Now he's being divine. But when he's sad and lonely and hungry, the switch is flipped down, and now he's being human. And we have this false notion that Jesus toggles between one and the other. But the Jesus, God taking on human form, somehow God is always God and fully man at the same time. And that's an important thing for us to hold in tension, if you will, knowing that Jesus experienced what we experience in such a way that it did not violate his divinity, but was fully humanity. In fact, Jesus was more human than we are because he was Jesus without the consequences of sin in his life. But it's like Jesus deals with sin from the perspective of humanity unfallen. Not from the perspective of God, but from the perspective of humanity with all of its brokenness and under the weight. It's as if Jesus is an Olympic sprinter who enters in a race with you and me, but he's in a sack. He takes on all the limitations and all the frailty and all the brokenness of our humanity. And he lives out his relationship with God in the context of that brokenness without having been broken himself. That means that you have a high priest who is able to sympathize with you in all of your weakness, in all of your challenge, in every aspect of your life. And as the author to Hebrews says, therefore, let us approach the throne of grace and find help in our time of need. Jesus calls us to something higher, to an identity that has already been granted to us through him with the Father. He looks upon you and says, you are my beloved son and daughter, whom I love and in whom I delight. And it's from that place that we're called to live out and face the valley and the darkness and the temptation and the wilderness. It's there that, as James says, that if we resist the devil, he will flee from us. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and sin that so easily entangles. Let us run the race with perseverance, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners that you would not grow weary or lose heart. And since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and worship God acceptably with reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire. Let us pray. Holy Lord, be with us in the valley. May we be aware of your presence as we walk through it, knowing that we follow you, the one who has.
Thank you for listening. find out more, check us out at storeschurch.org.